Afternoon, weebs of all walks.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Hi, friends.
You are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast.
Yeet.
And for today, you have your host, Megatron, with the smoothest voice, bringing heaven straight to your ears.
I'm getting the clamps.
Why are you our host today?
I am the host today because the 5th of November is my birthday.
Remember.
So, let's do a round robin real quick.
Well, we got Mechanical here over on the left, showing you what you got.
Maggleby, what's up, folks?
Fire and D-Zero signing in.
Yeah, the gang's here. So, today's topic is military anime.
Yes.
So that falls under the umbrella of war, some mechs, because let's face it, Gundam Wing is a military anime.
Yep.
And various other things that fall under the military umbrella here. So, I'll get this ball rolling.
Sounds good.
The anime I chose was Code Geass, Lelouch of the Rebellion.
Good one.
Yeah. So, the story encompasses Lelouch, who is the son of a tyrannical, empirical father who has pretty much conquered the whole world, or the majority of it. And he decides to rebel because of his own personal reasons, pretty much his mom dying. So he is visited by this woman named Cece, who he ends up rescuing, and she gives him the power of kings. So the power of king manifests differently in different people, and in Lelouch, it is the power of ultimate persuasion. So whenever he activates his power, he looks people straight in the eye, gives them the order, and they completely follow through with it. It could be like survive, and somebody will literally cut off their arm if they have to survive. So Lelouch is able to use this power along with his incredible gift of playing chess, which if we all know about chess, it's very good in terms of strategies and tactics. And he starts this whole rebellion, literally from the ground up. He ends up stealing mechs to fight his war. He ends up stealing resources and funds. He's able to get his own type of, Hans Goebbels. He's able to get his own version of that and in terms of propaganda.
Nice.
Oh, yes.
I was going to say, let's mention that Goebbels was the major Nazi propagandist.
So he ends up literally collecting all the pieces that he needs to fund this war, carry out this war, and take the war straight to his dad's doorstep. And the way that he's able to build a military is very similar to what you see in history. You have a ragtag bunch of guys. They are drilled by experience, and they're able to refine their skill set and teach that down onto the next iteration or the next generation. And so little by little, you have non-commissioned officers and officers working together, creating a branch of soldiers that expands. So in the same way that cells multiply and replicate, you're able to train a whole army. And on the face, as I am explaining it in very dry details, it can sound boring, but in reality, it is completely out of this world. There's so much political intrigue. There's so much mind games being played. And Lelouch, he's got to be a Scorpio because he keeps all the secrets. He keeps everything so closely guarded to his chest that not even his like most important people or his confidants know what's going on.
Yeah. On top of it being, you know, military anime in general are always have a lot of politics and infighting and the nitty-gritty drama of a revolution. But what makes this one so interesting is the introduction of essentially superpowers, is his ability, how he uses his ability of ultimate persuasion and where that falls on the moral spectrum is absolutely fascinating. It's a very cool series.
Yep, it definitely delves into the psyche a bit. And, you know, a lot of times I would ask myself, would I go to those lengths in order to get things done?
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because one thing that stuck out to me with in my original watching and ultimate completion was how revenge is a fool's game. And that is, like, one of the largest reoccurring themes in the series.
Yep.
And also just the futility of war.
Yep.
And you get all that, and you also get some amazing artwork done by Clamp. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful-looking series.
And despite everybody kind of looking like they're in their adolescence, it still kind of, like, weaves together into a very well-fitting format for the type of story that it is.
I was going to say, Lelouch ends up going to essentially a high school for a good while he's slowly getting, like, his grassroots movement going.
Yep.
He's in high school, so these are all kids, you know, older kids, high school age, but still, in the grand scheme of things, kids.
Yeah.
And that's another parallel to, I was going to say, a lot of the moral gray area comes from, Lelouch is very comparable to Light.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, where really, like, he's got good intentions, but he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
I would say the comparison isn't as strong, because Lelouch ultimately learns from his mistakes.
Right, so Lelouch is able to correct himself on the path while Light falls into his own.
Yes, exactly.
To be fair, I never finished the series, so.
So
I will say no more then.
So I'm gonna give it to you straight without any spoilers. Zero lives on to carry on the identity or the idea.
Yeah.
And that is what freedom truly is. Zero.
Yep.
Interesting, because they definitely, Zero and Lelouch and whatnot, definitely go back and forth throughout the series about whether you perceive them as good versus bad. And that's what I was saying is so interesting about this particular series, is when you're dealing with a militaristic environment, you have a lot of moral gray areas where you figure out, you know, what's best for the masses versus the individual, all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really put on another level by his power, by his ability to force compulsion.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts a whole nother very literal, it just puts a whole nother layer onto the morality of it, which is really fun.
So as you smear that forced compulsion in one nice, even broad stroke, I'll go out and say that, you know, Lelouch is who he is, and Zero is his alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody really knows who's who. It's kind of like, I'm not Batman, but you've never seen me in the same room before.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, going back to that, again, nice, even broad stroke of compulsion, when it comes to morals and ethics, you are definitely gut-checked watching this anime, because you end up, at least the way I watch it, I end up thinking to myself, can I make that call? Would I have made that call? Is there another way? Is it always black and white? Is there a gray zone that you can play with? Because a lot of the ethics and the morals that are dealt with in terms of freedom and humanity, it's a huge push and pull between what's good for the self and what's good for the masses. So again, it's very, very deep. It's very, very involved. There are many layers of complexity to this anime, and the military swath on it is just a background to all these immense, richly detailed layers that are involved in this anime.
Although I would argue that its complexity was ultimately its undoing, because the latter half of the first season, and I would say 95% of season 2, becomes a convoluted mess.
Mm.
There are just so many things going on, so many new characters are introduced in series 2, you're kind of just like, what was the point of all this? It's because it's trying to do all these things.
Yeah.
and it's trying to get and trying to tell this message about how revenge and war are bad. But by adding all those extraneous bits, it stumbles on itself and on its own message.
Yeah, it's kind of like how do you keep up with all names in Game of Thrones?
That kind of thing is
what happens.
I was going to say, Game of Thrones is a perfect comparison, especially looking at the books. People have trouble keeping track of all the characters in the show, and they chopped, like, half the characters for the show. The other thing I was going to say with the unnecessary layers and plot lines is, it sounds like it suffers from kind of the same comparison as Sucker Punch does, where you basically, that movie would have been fine with just reality and then one sub-layer. It did not need the three layers. That gave it an extra convoluted confusion. They tried to do one step too many.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you have all these amazing ideas. Which ones do you cut? And you kind of see that struggle.
It's almost like Zack Snyder didn't know what he was doing.
Shots fired. Can I get some sun with that shade? Right.
Well, here's the sun, I suppose, is that while we're critiquing it for its weak points, we definitely just spent a while talking about its strong points. And it is, despite it kind of getting in its own way, it is a very good series and worth watching.
I agree.
I would definitely say, like, going in, it was definitely a fun series to get into. Mm-hmm. And seeing, like, seeing how it all falls apart, in a constructed narrative, that was interesting too. Because you're kind of just like, whoa, what? I remember watching it thinking, oh, I'd love to have Gius, the power of Gius, and then later I'm just like, no, I don't want this power.
I don't want that responsibility. No thank you.
All right, I think we've touched upon it enough.
Yes.
We're going to roll it on.
Gee, I wonder what Mechanical is going to do.
Well, seeing as we already got Mechs covered, I think I'm going to roll the clock back, say, 100 years or so for a series called Pumpkin Scissors.
Pumpkin Scissors.
It takes place in this, it resembles a Western German, Western Europe, that country, like, just after the set of, like, World War One, it was between these fictional countries called the Royal Empire and the Frost Republic. Now, the main antagonist, Second Lieutenant Alice Melvin, had just graduated from cadet school.
War College.
Like, and right as she was, like, getting her diploma, the armistice was declared, and it was like, what, do what now? Mm-hmm. Now, she is of noble blood and is the granddaughter of the emperor. And she goes a little bit above and beyond in her duties, like, say, taking on, like, going against the tank with just, like, a saber.
Yeah, she's crazy like that.
Yeah, she definitely takes on fights bigger than her means, but but in that same instance, she met a retired soldier named Roland Oland. He was actually a member of one of the secret branches of the Empire's army. They have this superstition where they never make, like, a ninth branch because the emperor died on, like, the ninth day of the ninth month.
Yep.
Wow.
So, he's of the 901st Division, anti-tank division, like, the infantry that takes down tanks. So, this guy is, like, a 7-foot-tall, like, hulking beast.
He's like an Adonis is what he is.
Yeah. But he's, like, he's riddled with scars. Yeah. And, like,
more, yeah.
Yep.
I really need to watch this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, he's just, like, a mild-mannered, like, kind-hearted guy. But, like, he has this lantern on his side, and when he opens it, it's just, like, this eerie blue flame, and he just goes into this, like, trance. I wouldn't exactly call it a berserker trance, because he's not, like, wild. He's just fierce, fearless, and
He's ready like to tear stuff up. Yeah.
Nice.
Ready to tear stuff up.
He has this oversized single shot pistol. He calls the door knocker.
Mm-hmm.
Used to take out like the personnel of inside tanks. You find out, like, later on in the series, he used to have, like, these pair of giant shears, like, scissors, to pry open the armored plates off of the tank to get at them, too.
Mm-hmm.
It is insane how he did it. It's like... But, as it progresses, you find out that there were other, 900, battalions. Like, you find in the first episode, there's, the Chemical Warfare Battalion. They use chemical weapons on, like, a village to sort of, like...
Jeez.
To blackmail them into, like, you're giving us supplies or we're going to lay waste to your city.
Yep. Human atrocities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a whole lot of that.
It is what happens.
And you find out, like, there are, like, deeper divisions that are actually pulling the strings that, like, that actually lay the groundwork for, like, the 900th Battalion. And I'm not going to reveal too much.
One thing that I liked about Pumpkin Scissors was that it kind of showed, I wouldn't say a day-to-day, but it definitely showed the rank and file structure of what a military would look like in that time frame and, like, fictional 1930s to 40s era. If you want, you know what? Let's just be real. It was like diesel punk.
Yep.
So it kind of showed what a rank and file structure would really look like during that time period. And, I keep forgetting his name, but I'm just calling him the Adonis because we already referred to him already. But he is one lethal badass when it comes to ripping up those tanks.
Yeah, Randall Oland?
There you go, Randall Oland.
He looks pretty beast.
Yeah. Oh, show.
Yeah, it's like if you took Guts out of Dark Ages and brought him into, like, World War One.
Yeah.
World War One veteran.
Legit.
Guts.
And give him a hand, and give him a bunch of guns.
I don't know. He only has, like, that single oversized pistol and those giant shears.
Yeah, think of, like Hellboy with his gun.
Oh, fuck.
Boom!
That sounds fun.
Hand cannon.
That ain't no caster shot, but, man, it can cause hell.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as far as, like, war narratives are concerned, what makes Pumpkin Scissors so special?
Well, it does have a strong female lead protagonist.
Woo!
Yes. Always good.
Yep. And the Adonis, as Megatron so puts it, he's more of, like, a side character to all that is happening. He mainly takes the show during, like, full-on conflict.
Right. Mm.
So he's, like, support?
Yep.
Not that I want to take this spin on it, right, but... when it comes to femininity and masculinity and combat, what Pumpkin Scissors does well is that it places women in a masculine role of having to take charge but they swap it. So it's like a real relationship between an officer and an NCO where they lead based off of the situation. So officers will go to war, however the main people fighting the war are enlisted personnel. And so Roland the Adonis, he's able to take over almost seamlessly this command from the officer and execute, and that's what enlisted personnel are for. And so that's another one of the things that I actually like about Pumpkin Scissors, where shows like Pumpkin Scissors, show like Black Lagoon, shows like Claymore, they all put these females in these really, really strong roles that are normally archetype casted for males.
Yes.
I said it better myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said before, I'm definitely going to have to check it out because the way you definitely sold me on it.
Yeah. It's pretty badass.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, when he activates that spooky blue lantern, you hear this chanting, like, repeatedly saying, Totem Prize. It's sort of like a hypnotic chant. Like,
Is that German?
Yeah.
Yep. And now that I'm, like, revisiting all the memories that I have of Pumpkin Scissors, I can't help but think Valkyria Chronicles. Pretty much have the plot for World War II. But, like, there's just so many comparisons that can be drawn together. But what's crazy is that Pumpkin Scissors came out way before Valkyria Chronicles.
2006.
Yep. I remember I was taking French class.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's all you got to go with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool.
All right. I am going to talk about an anime called Full Metal Panic.
Classic.
Yeah, I was pretty excited. Well, no, when I first heard about this episode topic of military, mm-hmm. I kind of had to take a step back and go, like, what if I watched that? I know I've watched stuff like that, but what if I watched that hasn't really fallen, that we haven't really talked about before? Like, Full Metal Alchemist is an obvious choice.
Yeah.
Attack on Titan is an obvious choice. And then I remembered back in high school, one of the earliest mangas that I was introduced to, along with all the Yuutase stuff, you know, Yuutase and Shobits and all the, teenage girl stuff, I was also reading Hellsing, and I was reading Full Metal Panic.
Yep.
I still got all the manga on my shelf, so all right, you know what, let me give the anime another shot. So I spent my week watching this anime. So the series follows Sosuke Sagara, who's a member of an anti-terrorist private military organization known as Mithril. Mm-hmm. He and his team are tasked with protecting Kaname Chidori, who is a Japanese high school girl, who is something called a Whispered. Basically, she has, think of it as like a Russian sleeper agent.
Yep.
She has all this black technology subconsciously in her brain. And it's not really clear. It says it's something that she was born with, but it's also triggered by certain medications and code phrases. Anyway, she's been living as a normal high school girl.
Yep.
And Sosuke grew up in the military, but he is 16 years old. So they insert Sosuke into this high school environment to protect Chidori. Because they know they received intel that essentially the main counter organization that they've been fighting is after her specifically. So you have essentially this guy who has known nothing but military life, and I mean nothing but military life, his entire life. You see flashbacks of him as essentially a child soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Going into a normal high school environment. And it's fascinating to watch. It's framed comedically, but there is also a lot of serious undertone to it that he doesn't understand how to act in civilian society.
Yeah.
He really doesn't. Like I said, it's framed as comedic, where he's overreacting to everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's there to protect Kaname, but, you know, a friend comes around the corner and jump scares her, like, ah, you know, and he pulls a gun.
Yeah. Ready to, like, kill. Yeah. Wham! Yeah. What? Back up!
And nobody knows that he's a military personnel, so they just call him basically a military otaku.
Yeah.
And think that he's just obsessed with military stuff and that he's grown up obsessed with this. There's another kid in his class that is legitimately a military otaku, and they become, you know, friends immediately. They become besties, talking about specs for the mechs and whatnot, because this anime does in fact also have mechs.
Yeah.
They're called arm slaves. So anyways, Chidori's class is in fact eventually, as a class, kidnapped. They're on a plane to go to Okinawa for a class trip, and the plane gets hijacked, and they end up in an independent nation where this terrorist group essentially holds the entire plane full of kids hostage while they take Chidori and try to activate her whispered status.
Mm-hmm.
So Sosuke is there, and he's now in his element. He's in full military rescue op, and you get, as he's trying, he's been given orders to prioritize the hostages over Chidori at this point, because it's the as many people as we can save. We have a plane full of people here.
Yep.
And he, for the first time in his life, ignores those orders.
Yep.
Because he's gotten close to Chidori. In watching over her, in, you know, she's very spirited. She doesn't take any of his shit. Whenever he does something crazy to her eyes, she just hits him over the head and yells at him. Which is something that he's never really experienced before.
Yep.
So he goes off, he ignores orders, and he rescues Chidori. In doing so, they get separated from the group, and everyone is rescued except Chidori and Sergeant Sagara. Mm. They are left behind, along with one of his other wingmates, basically, Cruz. And so the three of them are now trapped in enemy territory and trying to essentially be rescued, get to the shore. And Sagara and Cruz are both badly injured at this point. And then you have Chidori, who's essentially just a civilian, you know? And she's obviously, she's been brought up to speed now. She knows what's going on. Oh, he's not just a military otaku. He's actually a fucking sergeant.
Yep.
And so they, yeah, they start fighting with Max, and there's this whole other layer to this story about essentially a new mech technology that responds not so much to physical skill as to emotional or spiritual conviction.
Yeah, Arbalisk or something like that.
The Lamada Drive.
There you go.
Yeah, Arbalisk is the, Obelisk is the name of the new, like, essentially model of mech, of arm slave, but it's the Lambada Drive, which is the special thing that essentially allows you to be like, put your spirit into it, and it actually gives you the extra, visualize your bullet going through the shield, and then it actually happens, you know?
Use the force.
No, exactly. So that's the main plot, is them protecting Chidori, and then getting, you know, getting through this crisis together. But then the series goes on, and you get to see more. Chidori essentially keeps getting accidentally pulled into these military situations because Kaname is there. Kaname is Chidori's first name because Sosuke Sagara is there. He's left on, even though the mission is finished. They say, well, she is still technically a person of interest. They may try again, so we're going to leave you on this assignment. Stay in school, stay with Chidori for about a year. We'll reevaluate it after a year. So because Sosuke is there, she keeps getting pulled into these situations, and she keeps getting, she ends up being helpful to them in these situations because, one, she's a driven and independent thinker who's not tied by the rules of military protocol. So she can think outside the box, and she can say, well, that's stupid, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
You know? But also, when she was initially kidnapped, they did manage to start to activate recall of this black technology, of this Whispered. And so when she's in a situation where she's, that information is crucial, it suddenly comes on, and she can feed them information to win the battle, and then she blacks it all out. She does not remember anything that she said. She can only access it in these emergency situations. So it's very interesting, and you have, you know, the continuation of that, and you get to meet the other people within the military, and the sense of the family and camaraderie and duty and everything that's inherent in a military anime. But what I like about this is the civilian aspect of it, is putting Sagara into an extreme situation where he has known nothing but military and he acts as nothing but military, and putting him into a civilian population and situation. And you'll get, like I said, it's framed comedically, so you'll get the, you know, someone does a jump scare and he pulls a gun, and then he, in trying to stop himself, skids and falls down some stairs. Ah, ha, 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 ha. But it's still definitely indicative of a PTSD reaction.
Yeah.
Even during the in-between episodes, there are larger arcs within it that are essentially one mission is, you know, 4 to 5 episodes or something like that. And then in between, they're essentially bottle episodes where it's just a one-off of everybody goes to the beach or everybody does this, you know? It's a day-to-day life situation. Yeah. But even during those, there's a moment in one of the early bottle episodes where he has to pretend to be someone's boyfriend, and her friends are, the friends of this girl are essentially suspicious, saying, he doesn't seem like your boyfriend. Why don't you two kiss to prove? And Sagato's like, okay, like, this is what I have to do now. And he kisses her, and she freaks out. The truth comes out that, how dare you kiss me, blah, 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 blah. And she runs off, and her friends run off after her, and it's left, you're left with just Sagata and Chidori, and she goes, how could you so casually kiss her? And he goes, what? I kiss people all the time. And she's like, who have you kissed? She goes, and he starts listing off, essentially, comrades who have died in his arms.
Yep.
And it's supposed to be this stupid little thing of like, oh, he's such a dog, or he doesn't understand the social implications of what he's doing. But then he's like, no, I've kissed men before, and like, because they're dying in my arms and they need that comfort.
Yep.
You know? And it's just such a casual little drop, but it brings the whole thing back into focus of, oh,
yep.
Like, there's a greater depth to this character.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just want to comment on a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely Sosuke's vernacular,
mm-hmm.
in referring to Chidori as the asset, as opposed to her name.
Yes.
That's very apparent. The not being used to civilian life, and that's actually a real thing. That's what leads to a lot of suicides, really.
Yeah.
Just to touch on that real quick, adjusting to civilian life can be very difficult, and a lot of soldiers can go into a downward spiral. Also, this whole idea of all these things that he says, like, very casually, or he does things very, like, to the point and to the end game, that's something that's very prevalent in military culture, because it's always about, you know, get the job done. And this notion of, you know, he's kissed so many people because they were dying. Well, so a lot of times veterans, you'll see them with a black or a silver bracelet on their wrist, and it lists all the people that they served with who have died. And that's kind of a token that's brushed up on in Full Metal Panic,
mm-hmm.
where he carries it around in his head, but people actually carry it around on their wrist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like this series, is because of how it touches on all of those other aspects.
And it's very graceful, too.
It's very graceful. Yes, because, like I said, it rides that line. What is it? Joss Whedon says, make them laugh and then make them cry. Or, like, make them cry and then make them laugh. Yeah, you know? The Coulson dying in the Avengers was tragic, but then he has this one-liner that lightened the mood again.
Yeah.
This series does that a lot, too, but in the other way, where you're in this comedic situation, you're in this awkward, funny situation, and you're up, and then it kind of brings you down, but then it seamlessly transitions back into the story.
Yep.
I was going to say, one thing that is worth noting, that is, the manga is significantly different from the various mainline series of Full Metal Panic.
The first story of the manga and the first story of the anime are actually the same.
Essentially, season one.
One is the same. The first, you know, 10 episodes follows the manga.
Yes. I remember my introduction to Full Metal Panic was actually the manga that was based off of Fumofu.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Let me just real quick. Fumafu is essentially nothing but bottle episodes. It takes out. It's the idea of you only have so many missions that they're on that are more serious, and then it's just nothing but the comedic one shot Sasuke doesn't know how to function in civilian society. Yeah. And it's framed as entirely comedic. You don't have any of those serious moments that kind of bring you back down to earth, which is why I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of it, because I was first introduced to the original one, and I fell in love with the line between of the dark comedy line, and that comedy isn't the main focus of it. Yeah. It's just something that kind of gets slipped in there.
Absolutely, yep.
Versus Fumafu is nothing but the comedic element of it. It's nothing but panty shots and, you know, pulling guns at inappropriate times, but instead of having that afterwards of, but I thought this, it's just a fully comedic, irreverent fallout.
And don't forget, teddy bear shootout.
Yeah. God damn that stupid fucking hamster thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, my introduction to Full Metal Panic was through that manga. back in the days of New Type USA, they had like one chapter in there of it, and I read it, and the entire thing was paid as we didn't know that Sosuke was a soldier. Mm-hmm. We knew that he had a relationship with Chidori.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that he carried weapons with him. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if they were real. We didn't know very much. We didn't know very much beyond that. So every single gag was played more like he's just a military otaku who's taking it way too far. And it was one of the most hilarious things I'd ever seen. And when I saw the anime, it put everything into context. I'm like, okay.
It is, I can understand enjoying Fumafu if that's how you're introduced to it. But coming from the original series and the original manga, so I had, like I said, I read the manga in high school, and I loved it. And then in my college anime club, I was like, oh, we're watching Full Metal Panic? Awesome, let's do this. I haven't watched the anime yet. And we watched Fumafu, and I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Man, alright, I'll throw it out there, right? Fumafu is all dessert, no vegetables.
Yes, yes, it really is.
Yes, uh-huh. It's nonsense. And I actually will say, comparing, I mentioned Fumafu was nothing but, you know, a panty shots and those comedic moments. I will say that the actual anime does suffer from unnecessary fan service.
Yeah.
Even within these very serious situations, you're suddenly focusing in on Chidori, who's having a very serious moment, but the camera starts at her crotch and her panties and then pans up. And there's no reason for it.
There isn't.
And that is a downfall that I definitely noticed specifically while I was watching the anime, is Chidori gets a lot of panty shots.
A lot
of unnecessary panty shots. That
I would say the product of his time, though.
Yeah. It was. It absolutely was.
It's
definitely
cringeworthy.
That's the primary downfall of this series, is I enjoy everything that it is, except for, and panty shots can be used occasionally for comedic stuff, and they're just not in this.
Yeah.
It is occasionally used to comedic advantage, but for the most part, it's just completely unnecessary.
That's one of those things that doesn't really transfer over into American culture.
Nah.
I've honestly forgotten about a lot of those. It's been so long since I've seen it. I mean,
I just rewatched it, and having started with the manga, which doesn't really have that, or at least not in my memory, I have to reread the manga, I've been meaning to do that, and then watching the anime and going, yeah, it's like, this is, you know, exactly the same, and I'm enjoying it, and then suddenly I was like, why, there's no need.
That was like one of the first anime DVD sets I tried to complete.
Teddy bear shootouts.
Yeah. If you want to take the military aspect out entirely, watch Fumafu.
Yes. All right. So I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah.
So my series is probably the newest of this discussion. It is a series that goes by two names. In the U.S., it is known as The Saga of Tanya the Evil. In Japan, it's known simply as Yojo Senki, which roughly translates to The Military Chronicles of a Little Girl. It is the tale of an atheist Japanese salaryman who was murdered on the tracks of the J-Rail, and as he's plummeting to his death, God comes to him and asks, why don't you believe in me? He's like, because I'm a man of business.
We talked about this on the show before, I think.
I don't believe we have.
I don't think I was there for that one.
Mm-mm. I don't think we have.
Please continue.
Yeah, so, like, I'm a man of business. I believe in facts, figures, this and that. And also because he's lived a pretty comfortable life in this world. So, God is, like, so tired of his mess. And the fact that he's now, that this man is now referring to him as mysterious being X. And he's just like, what if I rebirth you in dire straits? This guy is popped into an alternate reality that is faintly similar to World War I Germany. Only difference is there's magic, and so the salary man is reborn as Tanya, little blonde haired blue eyed girl who has retained all of her memories from her past life. So at the tender age of 9, Tanya finds out she has an aptitude for magic. And joins the ranks of this country's military. Her goal is to move up the ranks as quickly as possible and to regain some semblance of a cushy life like she had in 21st century Japan. Unfortunately, God wants his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. So he keeps increasing stipulations on poor Tanya as she's trying to move up the ranks in this military. First thing he does, As he becomes she, he tells Tanya, if you die any other way than by natural causes, you don't get to reincarnate ever again. Wow. That was the first major stipulation. So she's keeping that in mind as she's fighting in this war. Then later on, as she makes a name for herself as a soldier, God's like, okay, you really still don't believe in me after everything you've done, everything that you've been through. So, in order to enact your spells, you need to pray to me. So, during every battle, when she's doing, like, an area, like, an AoE type of attack, she has to do, like, a very meticulous prayer in order to do it. And so on and so forth through the series. And it's like, every time, every now and again, God will come up and be all like, still don't believe, and she's like, nope. One of the most hilarious parts of this show is just, we either just by human interaction or divine intervention, there's always some sort of impediment to her plan of just moving up the ranks as quickly as possible. It's like, you're a really great tactician. I want to move you to the front lines. I want you to create this battalion. And because she's so used to being a company person, she complies because she doesn't want to make it seem like she's trying to slink out. But in her head, you're kind of just like, are you fucking kidding me? Do I really have to do all this now? And she's completely ruthless, too. She, like, anything that's, any kind of kindness that seems genuine with her, it's clearly for an ulterior motive. Her first day of training her battalion, she starts throwing grenades at their tents and shooting at them and says, you have to survive for 36 hours or you're not fit to serve under me. And she does this, of course, because she wants to get out of doing as much as possible. And if they're not fit to fight, she doesn't have to lead them into battle. Unfortunately, it raises the morale of these troops, and now she has the ultimate fighting force.
And damn it!
Yes. And talking with people about this earlier, I've mentioned how this is actually an isekai series. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know what isekai is, it's Japanese for another world. So ultimately, an isekai is usually a teenage boy who's transported to a fantasy setting, beautifully animated. Like just little details, like when Tanya's on the battlefield, like a lock of her hair will like constantly blow back and forth, and it looks almost like it's an art, like a painting mistake, but it's actually just her hair moving. And that's to me a very good sign of animation.
So on his face, it sounds like a clash up between like the Book of Job and like that grandpa who's trying so hard to win the affection of his granddaughter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's and like when I really think about it, it has a lot in common with say Pumpkin Scissors as far as its setting.
Yeah.
Sure.
Only
sure.
It's not really isekai, but this is
magic.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you've talked about this before, you've talked about it more from the religious point of view, where the stubborn atheist,
yes,
and literally confronted with God and continuing to go, nah, 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 and God keeps coming back to be like, hey, now, and she's like, no. And the interesting juxtaposition of having the military life and climbing through the ranks so fast as a go-getter and doing everything as essentially a little girl.
Yes. And there are little moments in the show where she comments on the fact that the soldiers are kind of giving her a hard time because mm-hmm. she's a girl. Mm-hmm. But she proves herself time and time again. She doesn't really complain about the fact that she doesn't really complain about it because of her business setting and being a being a Japanese business person. She already has the mindset that I'm a cog in the machine. I need to play my part. Mm-hmm. She has her ambition though. It's not a lofty ambition like controlling the world or whatnot, but she just rolls with whatever's given to her. And that's what makes Tanya a very interesting protagonist. Because I can picture something like that going horribly wrong, like, oh, I'm going to use my future knowledge to try to shake things up and try to invent something from my time. It's like, nope, I'm going to use my knowledge and sprinkle use it sparingly. Like, one of the military officers asked her, like, what do you think this war is going to lead into? And she says, I see this becoming a world war. And lo and behold, it becomes a world war. It kind of just shows you war never changes.
Mm-hmm. This is like a one-off, runners up. So for me, it's going to be Violet Evergarden.
Yep.
Good one.
We've spoken enough about it, so I don't really have to say much. What about you?
08 MS Team.
Nice.
I have a couple of runner-ups that all fall under an interesting subcategory of vampire military.
Helsing's one of them.
Yes. Seraph of the End mm-hmm. and Blood Plus.
Blood Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that you say military and vampire, I just brought to mind Vampire Hunter D.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I was scrolling through military anime and I was like, vampire.
mine's technically 2-in-1. Legend of the Galactic Heroes, and it's a 2018 spinoff, D.A. Nue Thesis.
All right, well, since that just about covers it, we are going to sign off here.
Yes.
So this is Megatron signing off. Bye.
This is Mechanical saying, reuse, renew, recycle, be kind, and rewind.
Magleby wishing happy birthday to Megatron.
Thank you.
Byron D0, Saint Ja Matana, and happy birthday to this beautiful bastard.
Don't worry, your Energon cubes are in the mail.